Everybody across the land, here's a special from Sequel Cast, though I don't know what it's gonna be about. Maybe Woody Allen, maybe Spike Lee, maybe Technicolor, maybe 3D, or maybe you just gotta wait and see. Cause you're gonna find out after this.
Hello and welcome to Sequel Cast Special. Sequel Cast Special is a podcast roughly every month or so in which we look at either a franchise of films or just a topic about films in general, kind of at large. It's more freeform than the Sequel Cast show. So here on Sequel Cast Special, this episode, we're going to take a look at the concept of director's cut. What is a director's cut? What is an extended cut? What is a special edition? Are there differences between all of these? What does it mean? Are these better versions of the film than what came out? And so forth.
What are we here? What's life all about?
That's Thrasher.
Hello.
Doing a bit from Monty Python's Meaning of Life. The opening number, right?
Yep, the Eric Idle, the traditional Eric Idle musical number.
Yeah, performed by Eric Idle in his thickest French accent.
Not as thick as the John Cleese accent in Monty Python and the Holy Grail, which is a film that has a director's cut.
Yes, that's a good point. You can check out our website, of course, at sequelcast.com. And
you can
also
check
go to facebook.com/sequelcast. What?
I was about to make a joke about having an extended website, but the moment has passed.
Oh, that's all right. And also, you know, if you go on Stitcher, all the Sequel Cast shows, including a Sequel Cast, a Sequel Commentary, and Sequel Cast Special, are all available on the Stitcher. So if you go to stitcher.com/sequelcast, you can get the app that way. And all the Sequel Cast stuff is added as your favorite. It's done as one feed, but all three Sequel Cast shows, Sequel Cast, Sequel Cast Special, and Sequel Commentary, are on there. So it's another way you can listen to us as well. So director's cuts. We've never covered this before on a Sequel Cast Special show. There's certainly a lot to talk about. And we'll even, really quickly before we did this, I did a post on our Facebook page at facebook.com/sequelcast. When you already got like a bunch of responses of stuff people want us to talk about for the show. So that's always exciting. I guess the whole thing about director's cuts for me is I noticed it in the video store when I'd go to Blockbuster Video growing up. I think for me, maybe the first director's cut I ever saw might have been like Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
I think it's the same with me as well.
Yeah, or Blade Runner. I mean, certainly it was in the 80s with the videotapes and home video really taking off that you really got a lot of director's cuts. Although there might have been some theatrical ones before then, but really on video you could have multiple releases of the same film, which you didn't really get in the theater. So you think Close Encounters might have been yours?
Actually, I'm pretty confident it was. There was a time in the late 80s, and I'm not sure if it was just a regional thing or not, but they whenever they would show Close Encounters Encounters of the Third Times, the Charmed Life of the Professor's Mandolin, build a title. But one of the local affiliates, whenever they would play Close Encounters of the Third Kind, would make a very big deal about how they were showing the director's cut. I remember it like for a period of about 2 years, whenever they showed it, that was always in the announcement, that was always in the promo.
Yeah, I mean, it's there. You talk about Close Encounters, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, there's three different cuts of that film. You have the original theatrical cut, you have a special edition, and you have the final cut called the Collector's Edition.
I'm guessing that was a cut assembled after the original director's cut?
Yeah, the first cut, the special edition, has like a scene of him going inside the spaceship, and you see the aliens in the ship, kind of out of focus, dancing around. And then Collector's Edition, like, doesn't have that part. It's kind of like a mishmash between the two, but it doesn't have them where you get to see inside the spaceship at the end. And on the Blu-ray release in 2007, it has all three cuts of the film on there.
Oh, that's good.
And the same with the DVD re-release from that year. So, that's pretty cool. I mean, it can be very confusing trying to see what's a director's cut, what's not. I mean, also when the DVD home, you know, video format came out, you really started seeing things. One of the first I remember is American Pie had an unrated cut. And now there's not a movie that comes out that doesn't have especially a comedy or something, or an action film, that does not have an unrated cut. But that does not mean a director's cut.
Well, that's actually something I wanted to talk about, but I thought brought up until the end. That I really think the whole notion of director's cuts and alternate cuts and whatnot has really been cheapened by the fact that every time a horror movie, action movie, or comedy comes out on DVD now, it's always the too hot for the theaters cut. Or whatever. The stuff they wouldn't let you see. As if the studio, you know, is... It's that passive aggressive film ratings bullshit that I really cannot stand. Now you can't see this for your good money in a theater, but you can see this on a DVD with your money, and it speaks to a lot of things about commercial filmmaking that really annoy me.
Well, I mean, you also have things along that note where it's not called a different cut necessarily, but the home video version will be different than what was in the theater. In later versions, you know, sometimes like Conan the Barbarian, the version on DVD is the international cut, which
That's
is something like
true.
5 minutes longer. But, you know, it's not called a director's cut. It's not called special cut, special edition, you know. Or things like Eyes Wide Shut, Stanley Kubrick's last film. In its theatrical release in the United States, it had some censorship during some orgy scenes, which I don't think they were very explicit to begin with. And so the original video release of that was sort of like censored, but then later on DVD, they came out with a international cut.
Yeah, it's not as if he ever showed hardcore fucking. It was about sort of Cinemax, Emmanuel in Space level.
Exactly,
not very
graphic, even though it was an orgy, so that's sort of ironic.
But this, but actually just speaking of just like how many different kinds of cuts of a film there can be, it really does speak to kind of a problem, especially for completists like me. Which version of the film is the real version? Which version of the film is the one closest to the creator's intention, whether that's the screenwriter or the director or whoever was the creative force behind the film?
Yeah, and I think just because it's a director's cut doesn't make it better either. You know, I mean, it's up to the individual to choose which one they like more, but that you can have a choice is pretty interesting sometimes. And looking at our comments on the Facebook page at facebook.com/sequelcast, one of our listeners, Robert Groover, I believe you know, and him and Jordan Alleman both mention Blade Runner. And that's kind of, talk about a movie with a lot of cuts. Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so Blade Runner is a science fiction film, came out in 82, directed by Ridley Scott, loosely based on the Philip K. Dick novel, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? Has Harrison Ford, Rutger Hauer, and Sean Young, all that great stuff. So he had a theatrical cut that came out in 82. And then you also had a, what do you call it? Several different
An extended
cuts.
Cut, a director's cut, a director's final cut.
Yeah, oh, here it is.
Lots of different cuts.
Theatrical cut, 82, 116 minutes. There was an international cut that's 1 minute longer, also from 82, that was available in Europe and Asia on the Laserdisc. You had the what was called the director's cut, came out in 91, and it's the same length as the theatrical cut, but does not have voiceover, has a more pessimistic ending.
Oh, yeah.
Among other things. And in 2007, you had the final cut, which... have you ever seen that, Thrasher?
That's the thing. I actually don't know which versions of Blade Runner I've seen. I know I've seen it with voiceover. I know I've seen it without voiceover. And I know I've seen it other ways. It really is... my experience with Blade Runner is totally baffling. And not because of the content of the film, simply because of all the different ways I've seen Blade Runner.
Right. And the final cut is like 1 minute longer than the director's cut. The difference between the two are so slight. Like, unless I told you what was the difference, you wouldn't even notice. I almost think they just came out with that just to re-release it on Blu-ray on a massive box set at the time. Like, it's such a lame difference, but it's interesting that they did it. The original had this kind of moody film noir voiceover with Harrison Ford explaining some stuff about the world the movie takes place in. And then the director's cut takes it out and also makes the movie feel a lot more stark. And in the theatrical version, it's difficult to describe this movie quickly, but basically the good guy gets away with the girl and they drive off. In the director's cut, it's revealed the good guy actually is a...
replicant.
Is a replicant. An android, basically. A robot that looks and feels human. And has a lot of shots of an origami unicorn and all these things in it. Flashbacks of a unicorn running around.
Which may have been stolen from the set of Legend. Which is another film.
I think it actually was. Yeah, sure. I mean... Yeah, Legend had a U.S. cut that was like 30 minutes shorter and had a completely different music score. The U.S. version had the music score by the pop band Tangerine Dream.
And that's some of those cuts are odd. I know if you see it on DVD, you're seeing a cut that's different than the version that was shown on the pay cable channels like HBO and Cinemax, which is different from the cut of the movie which was shown on television stations with commercials, which is apparently different from... I cannot confirm or deny this, but I have heard that there are two European cuts. There was a cut for Britain, and then there was a cut for the rest of Europe. And back in college, I had a friend who... Speaking of crazy stuff that may or may not be in the film, but I had a friend in college who claimed that she had seen the European cut, and that apparently there's this bizarre... psychosexual scene where Tim Curry, the woman that Tim Curry's darkness is trying to seduce, she is a glamour transforms her into like a panther type creature, which darkness then like has sex with, or at least simulates sex with. I don't know if this is the case. If anyone has seen this cut, please let us know. But if that was filmed for that movie, damn, that takes some mythological balls.
Some mythological panther balls. Yeah. The version of Legend on DVD, as far as I know, at least what we got in the U.S., has the U.S. cut with the Tangerine Dream score, has the longer international version with the score by Jerry Goldsmith, where it's more of a typical instrumental score and less new agey sounding, for lack of a better term. And is like 30 minutes longer and stuff. And, what's the director's cut that stands out to you, Thrasher? There's so many of them out there.
Well, one that stands out to me, only because it's very important to me, is the Apocalypse Now redo. That...
Good one.
Because, I think I mentioned on the show before, my father was a medic in Vietnam, and he doesn't really... when he talks about his experiences, he's clearly only telling half the story of what he experienced. And from what I gather from conversations with my mom, there's a lot he holds back about what he may have seen and done during that part of his life. But Apocalypse Now is a very important film to him because of his experiences in that war. And it's a very important film to me because of its position in film history and the level of storytelling in that film. So we've both really been able to bond over that film. And I remember when the director's cut was released, and there was a screening in Savannah, Georgia, and I had really been talking up the movie, and I had convinced a bunch of my friends to come see it with me. And I was enraptured the entire time, but the moment we left the theater, about four people turned to me and went, "What the hell was that? What did you just make us watch?"
Now, isn't that cut, which is called Apocalypse Now Redo, isn't that, like, much longer than the original one?
Yeah, it's almost an hour longer.
Wow.
Than the theatrical release. Now, I will freely admit it probably is... You probably... If you have never seen the original cut, you should probably see that before you invest any time in the director's cut. But I really liked all the added material. I felt that it did add a little bit more subtext and beefed up an already heavy narrative.
Now, because of that, the thing that comes to mind to me, did you ever watch that cut of it with your dad?
You know, actually, I did not, my mother did. It apparently affected him pretty heavily.
Did he like it better, or do you know? Or?
You know, I don't know if he liked it better or not. That's the version he has on DVD. But then again, you know, my parents got a DVD player right when that came out on DVD, so he may have just grabbed the first one he saw. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'd be interested to find that out. But from someone that was actually there in Vietnam. Another suggestion off our Facebook page for Director's Cuts to talk about, Stephen Applebaum, who is a writer and one of the head dudes over at smbmovie.com. We had him as a guest on the sequel cast special Super Mario Brothers show.
Oh, yeah.
Based on the movie, you know, talking about the movie and stuff. He was talking about the Donner cut of Superman 2, which is, I thought was a really good point.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever seen that, Thrasher?
I don't know, actually.
You don't know? I mean, in Superman 2, you were talking about earlier how TV cuts are different. There, on the bootleg circuit, there's been, you know, the extended TV cut where they added, like, an hour extra of deleted scenes so they could stretch it out on TV and play Superman 2 over two nights as the movie of the week in the in the 80s or whatever. And but yeah, the Superman 2 was so weird because originally the Superman 1 and 2, I'm talking about the ones with Christopher Reeve here as Superman, were supposed to be filming back-to-back, directed by Richard Donner, who now is known for stuff like Lethal Weapon, and at the time he had directed The Omen, a horror film that was a big hit. And they picked him up for Superman. And he was spending a lot of money, apparently, you know, and putting a lot of really hard work into it. And they released Superman 1, and he filmed a lot of Superman 2, but not quite everything. And after Superman 1 came out, he apparently was trash-talking the producers a bit, and they fired him and replaced him with Richard Lester. And Richard Lester has directed, like, the Three Musketeers movie from the 60s or 70s, a lot of the Beatles movies.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of really good stuff. And so Richard Lester took over and, in fact, refilmed a lot of the Richard Donner scenes because there's a rule at the time to get a directed by credit, a certain percentage of the film has to be shot by you. So it was a really bizarre situation for everyone involved, and Richard Lester returned for Superman 3.
And we all know how that worked out.
Right, right. And because of that, they've been talking about the Superman 2 Richard Donner cut forever and ever. The full title of it is called Superman 2, The Richard Donner Cut, The Version You Have Never Seen. Is what it says as the wieldy title on the DVD.
Well, have you seen that cut?
I have, and I got to see it in a theater, actually. They screened
nice.
It in Portland, Oregon, as a midnight movie as part of the monthly Court and Fat Boy midnight movie screenings at the Baghdad here in Portland, Oregon. And Yeah, I mean, and a big difference between the two is the Richard Donner cut has more humor, and they kind of take a lot of the humor out of it. In Superman 2, the theatrical cut, the one by Richard Lester for the most part, there's a part, you know, Superman wants to lose his powers, and he talks to his mother. In the Richard Donner cut, he talks to his father, you know, played again by Marlon Brando, as in the first film. So that's pretty interesting. And at the beginning of the theatrical cut of Superman 2, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, Thrasher, isn't there like a big sequence in Paris?
There
right,
is.
In France?
If I remember correctly, yes, there is.
Something like with mime setting off explosives on the Eiffel Tower or something. Well, that scene doesn't even exist in the Richard Donner cut, and instead you get this really kind of amusing scene of Superman trying to run between being Superman and Clark Kent in the middle of a conversation with Lois. That's pretty neat. I mean, there's really a lot of differences between the two, and it's worth your time. I think both of them still have their problems. I don't think Superman 2 was a perfect movie in either cut.
At the same time, though, it is my favorite Superman movie, and for the longest time, it was my favorite superhero movie. I mean, it really is good, despite its flaws.
There is something to be said about a Superman movie where he's facing off against someone that seems like a threat to him.
Well, that isn't just Lex Luthor.
Lex Luthor,
and we get
yeah.
to see some real. we get to see a superhero fighting a supervillain with a level of destruction that normally you could only get in the comics.
And surprisingly, they haven't really done that much with Superman since. I mean, in Superman 4, The Quest for Peace, he fights Nuclear Man, but that's not a fight that inspires fear.
Well, you think like, if you're going to do... I mean, that whole movie is a wash, but I mean, there's plenty of radioactive villains he could have fought. He could have fought... Metallo, powered by an atomic pile. He could have fought Conduit. That's assuming Conduit.
Yeah.
I don't know if the character of Conduit had been created in the comics by then, but the point is...
Well, and supposedly the new Superman movie coming out in, I think, 2013, right? Is that? Or is it the Superman
movie? I think you're right, yeah.
Man of Steel. Simply called Man of Steel, directed by 300 director...
Douchebag Slow-Mo.
Douchebag McSlomo, it's Zack Snyder, starring Henry Cavill as Man of Steel, Superman himself. I believe it's supposed to have General Zod in it and stuff.
Well, that would be nice, although I will freely admit, I do not like that director's output, and I have such strong feelings for Superman, I'm just waiting to be disappointed by that film.
Well, speaking of Zack Snyder, you know, he did a comic book film, The Watchmen.
Oh, yeah.
And he did a longer director's cut of that, which I have not seen. And to make things even more confusing, when they came out with it on DVD... Oh, how can I make this quick? Okay, so part of the Watchmen comic book is a comic book inside a comic book about pirate adventures that connects thematically with what's going on in the bigger Watchmen story. They made a direct-to-video cartoon of all the pirate comic book stuff.
Oh, I've seen that. Freighter.
Yeah, Black Freighter. And in, like, the wackiest, biggest cut, not the director's cut, which is, like, longer than the theatrical cut, but in some other, like, I guess it's called special cut. I'm not quite sure, because I haven't seen it. They incorporate that cartoon and stuff into the main feature.
Well, this transitions nicely to a topic around director's cuts.
Yeah.
Are they just overindulgent and masturbatory?
I think they can be. I mean, sometimes, you know, speaking of masturbatory, I can't speak today because I'm drinking.
And because you're masturbatory.
I'm masturbatory as I record the show, like I do every time. I'm drinking Iron City Beer Premium Lager, the official beer of the Pittsburgh Nation.
I'm drinking water.
You always disappoint in that regard, Thrasher. Sometimes you drink something special.
Well, what do you expect me to say? My mistress's piss?
That'd be a start, yeah.
Okay, you've just given me a challenge.
Honey, drink up. It's a special beverage on the way. No.
Drink the drink that I have made. Yay, brother, no. Pour of the wine.
Jesus. I'm going to stop sweating uncomfortably now. And speaking of, you know, cuts that are kind of masturbatory, there was a massive Alien Quadrilogy box set that came out on DVD in, 2003, 2004 or something like that. When that came out specifically for that box set, they came out with a director's cut of Alien. And Jordan Alleman on our Facebook page was kind enough to point this out to me. They did a director's cut for that DVD release. And it's shorter than the theatrical cut of Alien and has a deleted scene in there, but I don't think it's really better. And Ridley Scott said, oh, the director's cut name is just for the marketing. I still like the original theatrical cut the best.
Huh.
He just wanted to kind of fool around and see what a different version would be like. It has a deleted scene from the original Alien where Sigourney Weaver is going around the ship, and in a room she sees the guy in the movie played by Tom Skerritt. She sees him, like, in a cocoon, in an alien cocoon thing trapped against the wall. You know, kind of, like, overtaken by the alien, and it's a neat sort of special effects scene, but it kind of slows down the momentum at the end of the movie where she's running back into the ship to get her cat, back on the escape pod.
I'm going to have to seek that cut out. I really enjoy Alien, and that's...
Another thing in the director's
cut of that, and it's rare you see a director's cut that's shorter than the theatrical cut.
Well, yeah, and specifically he trimmed some of the stuff in the beginning because he went in to make it so they'd get to picking up the alien a bit quicker, because he was thinking modern audiences watching a new cut of the film would want to get to the alien faster.
Huh.
So that's pretty interesting. That whole box set, and they've re-released it on Blu-ray and all these things as the Alien Saga, I think, in the latest release is what they call it. With the first four Alien films, it has alternate cuts of all four films. And for Alien 3, which was directed by David Fincher, and Jordan Alleman on our SequelCast page at facebook.com/SequelCast mentioned this as well, there's an assembly cut. It's not really a director's cut, because the director, David Fincher, who has done modern stuff, you know, classics like Seven, the recent American remake of Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and stuff. Alien 3 was his first theatrical film, and he's refused to kind of talk about it. But that movie had a lot of problems in production, and they tried to make it as close to what a rough cut of the movie was as possible,
mm-hmm.
and it's like at least half an hour longer. They even got actors back to redub lines that were unclear in the original recording. And you get a lot more character development in the assembly cut of Alien 3. And while still a flawed film, I agree with our listener Jordan that I think it's better than the theatrical version. Have you ever seen that either?
No. I don't think so.
I should have made you watch that when we were in college. Anyway.
Well, you know, there'll be, you know, one of these days, one of us is going to have a vacation where we go to the other city and we'll share.
That's true. Yeah, I think so. I've talked about a few different director's cuts. What's something else you want to talk about, Thrasher?
Well, I guess at some point we got to talk about the big bad, the Dune and the Dune director's cut.
Oh, good one. Go ahead. Dune being the movie directed by David Lynch based on the novel by Frank Herbert.
Yep.
Okay.
Sometimes with the movie credited to Alan Smithy.
Can you explain what Alan Smithy is?
Yeah, Alan Smithy is a Hollywood institution, but the short of it is, when a director makes a movie that the director has decided is beneath him or is disappointing, or that the director otherwise would not really like to be associated with, there's a clause with the Directors Guild that he can take his name off of it and replace it with Alan Smithy. So whenever you see a film directed by Alan Smithy, it's because the director decided they wanted their name removed. And so one of the cuts of Dune is the Alan Smithy cut, the one where the Alan Smithy name comes up in the credits.
Right. And, Dune, it's a very dense book. It's a very dense film. And I think really interesting costumes and special effects and stuff, but I don't think the movie makes sense if you haven't read the novel.
Well, it is just gorgeous. It is a gorgeous film. The interesting thing about the film is it's a film that I do, strangely enough, I do enjoy. I see absolutely everything that is wrong with it, but I'm not willing to say that it's a bad film. And even though the director's... Because I believe... Isn't the director's cut of Dune shorter than the original theatrical cut? Isn't the director's cut 3 hours and the original is about four?
No, it's the other way around. I mean, the director's cut, they don't even call the director's cut because it says, you know, by Alan Smithy. But the theatrical cut is 140 minutes, so almost, so a little bit over 2.5 hours long. And the, I'm trying to find the length here, geez. The other cut of the film, I think, is at least 3 hours. It might be a little bit longer. And, in, you know, apparently David Lynch originally wanted to release a version of the film that was much longer, and but they cut a lot of stuff out of his movie to get it down to 140 minutes, and he got really offended by that. And apparently that's one of the reasons why he never revisited it. And there is an interest, I mean, you know, David Lynch, like, in retrospect now, wishes he never would have really done the film. And he feels like it's the one time he kind of sold out.
Yeah, I'm guessing, I can only guess that the studio thought that they were going to get the next Star Wars.
Well, exactly. He was signed on, David Lynch was signed on to direct, you know, 2 and 3, that being Dune Messiah and Children of Dune. And they had gotten pretty far in a script for Dune Messiah, but this movie it was very expensive and wasn't a huge hit. That, you know, that they wished it would have been.
You know, though it is neat to watch both versions and kind of compare them. Although I think this is another movie where if you see it on cable, sometimes you'll see an alternate cut with some extra scenes. I know one of the cuts, for reasons I still don't quite understand, has a scene where the Baron Harkonnen has some doctor and he's removed like an important gland from the doctor, so the doctor has to have his lymphatic system piped into this like cat in a hairless cat in a box. It's a weird ass scene. I'm not making it up. I didn't age.
Yeah. No, a lot of David Lynch's stuff in all his films are very strange and surreal. So,
but I like it.
No, I think there's enough with Dune to recommend it, but I just would highly recommend you read the book first. Because there's a lot going on in there. And also, you know, of course, Sci-Fi Channel did miniseries based on Dune and Children of Dune.
Mm-hmm.
That I think are interesting, worthy of discussion.
They're very enjoyable, I find.
Yeah. I think we could possibly do all three of those as a future sequel cast thing.
That would be fun.
In a very loose sense, you know, kind of like with the Lord of the Rings cartoons, where it's loosely connected. Anyway, we're not talking about that. We're talking about director's cuts and all these sort of things. Stephen Applebaum on our Facebook page at facebook.com/sequelcast was talking about Renegade Cut of Highlander 2, which we talked a bit when we covered Highlander 2, where Highlander 2 is another film with three different cuts. You have the Renegade Cut, and you have, like, the Special Edition, in which the Special Edition has, like, CG spiffed up special effects on top of things. But nothing as far as new footage exactly. And the Renegade Cut of Highlander 2, I think, is better than the original theatrical one. But I find that movie kind of a mess. Thrasher, you enjoyed it more than I did. Highlander 2, the
I did enjoy it. Like, I do find it to be generally speaking, it's a very fun movie. It just is a movie with a very poor story. And half the characters I just do not give a damn about. But beyond that, I still find it very entertaining. It entertains me as much as the original Highlander, though it is not as good as the original Highlander. It's not quality entertainment.
Have you ever seen any of the extended versions of the live-action Lord of the Rings films directed by Peter Jackson?
I'm sure I have, actually. Sometimes a sequel cast guest, BJ, I actually had spoken to him yesterday about that, and we were trying to figure out how many cuts of The Lord of the Rings there were, because there were the theatrical releases, but then the DVD releases were extended editions, and I was under the impression that the Blu-ray releases were also yet another cut of the films. Is that the case?
No, that's not the case. It's the same as the extended edition.
Oh, okay.
What they did do on the Blu-ray version is they kind of combined all the special features from, like, the three separate DVD releases that Lord of the Rings had, which is a lot of documentaries, really. So, because they've released that movie a lot of different times. But I've seen the extended cut of all three of those. I think a lot of the extended stuff is good, but, I mean, it also makes... These movies are originally about 3 hours apiece, and it makes them anywhere from 3.5 to 4 hours long. you know what I'm saying? So they're long yeah. movies to begin with. But I think if you enjoy the books and like the extra detail... For me, I especially like the extended cut of Fellowship of the Ring, because you get about maybe 10 minutes, or it feels like 10 minutes at least, of extra footage of Hobbiton, of the stuff with Bilbo's birthday, and you get a lot of hobbits being hobbits in the Shire, and that I really enjoy that kind of stuff.
You know, there is still a part of me that would like to just sit down and have an all-day marathon of those movies.
Wouldn't that be fun? We could release it as a 10-hour sequel commentary.
The commentary track that will end Jesus. All commentary tracks and end us.
Yes. Pretty funny. There is something to be said about, have you ever done that before? Watched a sort of trilogy back-to-back in the same day?
I've done that with Star Wars. I'm pretty yeah. sure I've done that with Aliens. I'm trying to think if I've done that with any... I might have, oddly enough, I think I might have done that with the Sailor Moon films at one point.
There's a lot of those.
Three.
Oh, okay. I've seen one of those. The one about the ice, the one about the ice princess or whatever.
Oh yeah, I think that's the second one.
I believe that's right. I'm not sure.
You think we'll ever do those?
Jeez. It's a possibility.
If we don't, I have to say this: the love theme in the Moon Revenge song in the first Sailor Moon movie has the best line in any song. At least this is how it's translated from Japanese. It's translated as, "It will ravage your body into a beautiful corpse."
Hmm.
I love that line.
That's the only kind of convoluted phrase you can get from awkward translating from Japanese into English.
I don't know, it sounds really poetic. I'm betting that that's yeah? probably pretty close.
Hmm. So, I mean, you mentioned Star Wars. That's something else we can touch on. You know, there were the Star Wars special editions of Star Wars Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, where they added, kind of spiffed up some of the special effects with CG and added some scenes in some of the some of the movies. And, you know, and that's even not even in those cases, the directors weren't even involved in the special editions of those films, except for it was just George Lucas doing everything, even though George Lucas did direct Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope.
Yeah, it pretty much was all Lucas's baby. And I'll admit, when those first came out, I really liked them. And I think part of that was because at the time, that was the only way I was ever going to see Star Wars in a theater.
Me too.
And I thought the only, like, in my whole lifetime, I never thought it would come back. But looking back on it now, I only like about half of the extra stuff.
You know, one thing, watching Star Wars on the big screen, the special editions, I found sequences like the Death Star trench run and the speeder bikes on Endor from Return of the Jedi to really play better on the big theater, on a big screen.
Mm, yeah. Those hold up, and they're all practical effects.
Yep. Yeah, I know. Those weren't really scenes that were monkeyed with too much, except for some of the explosions, maybe. So,
hey, if I can just have a bit of a beef for people making science fiction films, can we stop having the giant ring coming out of explosions of big things in space? It doesn't really look good, and I don't believe any. It doesn't look good. Explosions don't really happen in space. And what the hell is that ring?
It's an extra bit of flair.
But it's just silly. It turns an explosion and makes it into a firework.
I don't know what to say. I mean,
That's how I feel about rings coming out of space explosion.
Good to know. You know, you talk about rains and space explosions, it reminds me of another director's cut. For Star Trek The Motion Picture, had a few different cuts on that one as well.
Which of the cuts is watchable?
None of them. No, I mean, so in all honesty, Star Trek The Motion Picture, they rushed this into theaters and in fact started making it as a response to Star Wars being so successful. But originally they were going to do just a new Star Trek series on TV.
It was like Star Trek Phase 2, I think?
Yeah, Phase 2. But then when Star Wars and the theaters did so well, they're like, ah, fuck it, we're just going to make a movie. So they, you know, worked their asses off to get the cast back together, and you have a movie that's has very ugly costumes and...
very ugly is, characterization.
And notoriously slow-paced. But Dr. McCoy does get a pimp chain in the beginning.
Yeah, it's not... That film, I guess the Star Trek The Motion Picture, it's only worth it because we got Wrath of Khan afterwards.
Well, yeah, and Star Trek The Motion Picture was, like, really successful, too. Because, I mean, Star Trek had been in repeats on TV, but there hadn't been new adventures with the crew in decades. So.
Yeah. Unless you count novelizations.
Well, I guess in a decade, I'm sorry, because the original series ran from 66 to 69. But you're right, they had novelizations of the old TV episodes. They had Star Trek novels of original stories, all these things. So that in comic books and the cartoon series. So.
Oh, hey, if you want to take a look at the Star Trek that could have been, check out, it was published by White Wolf Game Studios' Borealis imprint. The book of Harlan Ellison's screenplay for the Star Trek episode "The City on the Edge of Forever." It has a lengthy introductory essay, but part of that introductory essay is Ellison recounting a meeting he had with executives at Paramount where he pitched a plot for the first Star Trek film. He was invited to pitch on it, and sadly, they didn't bite.
Now, wasn't his plot kind of like a time travel?
Yes, it was about time travel and genocide and the essence of human civilization. It was really fascinating. And what was really kind of ballsy is that, like, Kirk, I don't think, appeared in the film for like a half hour. And he makes, and the way the story was supposed to be structured, it was supposed to look like the entire original Star Trek cast was being assassinated one by one. So he was really going to try to make the audience think that the crew of the Enterprise was going to get killed off before the movie hit the halfway point.
Well, I was going to mention different cuts of Star Trek The Motion Picture. You had the original theatrical cut. You had an extended cut that was 10 minutes longer for home video.
Was it that more footage of people staring slack-jawed at space things?
Yeah, I think in that version, the sequence of the Enterprise crew on the transport ship waiting to board the Enterprise goes on for 45 minutes instead of 30. But the director, Robert Wise, who also directed things like Sound of Music and West Side Story, wasn't really involved in that, but he was involved in a director's cut called Director's Edition, which came out in 2001, on a DVD release, and they redid the special effects and but tried to make them still look like 70s effects, just a bit better composited. And then for whatever convolutedly, when the movie came out on Blu-ray in 2009, it was the original theatrical cut. It wasn't the director's edition with the new special effects, because when you take especially computer effects and try and update it from a 480i resolution to 1080p, it just looks jumbled and digital, and you'd have to redo them all to make them look real crisp. And they didn't want to do that for whatever reason. So the version on the Blu-ray is the theatrical cut, for better or for worse. And I mean, that's something Star Trek, you know, the original series, they re-released it with redoing the special effects, and they're starting to do that now with Next Generation. Do you think that kills some of the fun?
Of going back in and up, vamping up the effects?
Yes.
I've been rewatching Classic Trek, and I've seen the where they've gone back in and they beefed up some of the effects, and I gotta say, I love what they've done for any scene involving a starship, like the space battles and things.
Yeah.
A lot more dynamic than they could do in the original 60s, and the transition from like people on the bridge to what's going on outside of the ship, it's always a smooth transition. So I'm not immediately jarred and pulled out of the show and thinking, wait a minute, they changed that effect. That being said, anytime they beef up a special effect that involves any of the actors, whether it's them being attacked by an energy being or firing some fancy laser array, that I don't like. Because that does take me out of the show. And I'm like, well, no. They couldn't render things like this back in the 60s, let alone put it into a practical effects sequence. Like, I only like beefed up special effects when they don't take me out of the film and draw attention to themselves.
And that is interesting when you try to watch, you know, the original versions of, you know, either the original Star Trek show or Next Generation. It is often the scenes with the spaceship that look the worst. So you can see why updating those where it's like a scene that's just a pure effect shot would look better updated than one that combines the actors and the effects in the same scene. One director's cut I really enjoyed. You know, sometimes a movie gets a director's cut and they change the title of the movie.
Really?
Yeah, one of these, so Almost Famous was a movie that came out in 2000, written and directed by Cameron Crowe, loosely based on his life story as a teenager being hired as a writer for Rolling Stone magazine. And it's a really interesting movie, and the director's cut was just called Untitled.
Hmm.
And it has a lot more scenes in the beginning with the character between the protagonist and his mother and all these things. And it's a really great movie. The director's cut, I think, is even better. But that it was retitled for the director's cut, I thought was really interesting. And some of that's probably just marketing. I don't know. But because the DVD box art of it at the time just looked like a paper bag or something crumpled up, and it had Untitled written on it, like a bootleg cut of an album.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So, do you mind if I talk about another cut?
Oh, no, go right ahead.
Hey, one that I've been thinking of, and I've never seen this version of it because it hasn't been available in anything other than videotape, is, you know, Francis Ford Coppola's Godfather films?
Yes, I do.
Right, and there is a version of that they redid for television where they took The Godfather 1 and 2 and added a bunch of deleted scenes and then recut the whole thing so it's all chronological, in chronological order.
I've heard of that. Like, it's always a phantom that a lot of my my film school friends are always chasing, trying to find a cut of that.
Yeah, and I think it might have been called... Yeah, there's a few different names, and there's a few different videotape and Laserdisc releases on it. But when they came out with it on DVD and Blu-ray, they've never released that other cut of it. Although they do keep, you know, deleted scenes as a side thing to watch. And I think that's an interesting exercise, trying to do that stuff and seeing, you know, in order, it might make some of the Godfather 2 storyline make more sense. Chronologically, I don't know. But so that's one. If you can find the videotape, it's called The Godfather Saga. It's originally for TV, and then they also did another version of it chronologically, using material from Godfather 3 as well.
How much footage from Goodfellas is in that?
Nothing from Goodfellas. That's a totally different movie.
No, that's just right. There used to be a gag in Mad Magazine that Goodfellas was the final film in the Godfather trilogy.
I mean, they're all good movies. It's different, but Yeah. What's the director's cut that comes to mind for you as we wrap things up?
You know, I'm trying to... Well, actually, now that I think about it, the Reanimator Special Edition DVD is, for all intents and purposes, the director's cut of the film. It has a bit more footage than the original theatrical release, but it doesn't have all the stuff that was in the television cut. Hmm. It's only I think it's maybe 5 to 10 minutes of extra footage. It's some minor tweaks, but it is, according to the commentary track, it is, for all intents and purposes, the director's cut. And as we've talked about, that's a movie that I love.
Oh yeah?
Oh yeah.
Man, we've talked about all three of those Reanimators pretty early on in the sequel cast. You can check all that stuff out at sequelcast.com or look up sequelcast on iTunes.
Were we ever so young?
We were a few years ago, yeah.
Yeah, but look, thinking back of, well, actually, can I talk about a film that desperately needs a director's cut?
Sure.
Okay. Well, here's the deal, and this is a film. This is a film I feel very strongly about, and I was recently reminded of it because it's shown up on Netflix, and some friends of mine watched it, and I kind of accidentally just gave this screaming rant in their living room about why they shouldn't be watching the film and how they were wrong to have good memories of it from their childhood. But the Thief and the Cobbler desperately needs a director's cut. It was an
Right.
Based on the Arabian Nights, starring Vincent Price as the Grand Vizier, and it was the life's work of the animator Richard Williams. He worked on it. He poured almost 30 years of his life into making this movie. And just, you know, like, you know, doing other things, getting just enough money to finance maybe 5 to 10 minutes of the film. And in fact, you can see elements of The Thief and the Cobbler from showing up in other movies. He did the Raggedy Ann and Andy animated movie, and there's a surrealistic chase sequence in that uses the same layouts as The Thief and the Cobbler. But it would have been truly a masterpiece of the animator's craft. And the problem is, as he was getting closer and closer to completion, a studio finally offered to pick it up, distribute it, and give him the money he needed to finish the production of the film. So of course he jumped on it, not reading the fine print in the contract. The studio took the film away from him, finished it with a different hack director that they found. Decided that they couldn't release a movie where the title characters, the Thief and the Cobbler, never spoke. So they hired Jonathan Winters and Matthew Broderick to record lengthy, mostly improvised internal monologues for the characters. Then decided that they couldn't release a movie that did not have an animated movie that did not have musical numbers. So they had a series of shitty musical numbers written and animated for this movie, and then released the whole thing. And it really is a travesty. You can clearly tell what scenes were animated under the direction of Richard Williams and which scenes were directed under Hacks. And that includes all the musical numbers, the animation style, even little nuances in the character design just change for no reason. The studio shit on a man's life's work, and I will die happy if I see this film as Richard Williams intended it to be.
Is there any talks of that ever coming out, or is there even enough footage for that to happen, or they have to reanimate stuff to get it?
They wouldn't have to reanimate anything. They'd have to cut out the new stuff, and they'd have to finish whatever was left to be animated. And I've heard everything from 10% of the film needed to be finished to 15% to 25% needed to be finished. I really don't know for sure. When DVDs first got really big, there actually was a campaign to produce a director's cut DVD that was going to try to get as much of the film, as much of the unfinished parts finished as Richard Williams wanted, and possibly fill in any missing gaps with storyboards. But sadly, nothing came to that, I think because of rights issues.
One recent, or fairly recent, director's cut I watched I thought was much better than what was in the theaters theatrically was a Ridley Scott's Kingdom of Heaven.
Oh, yeah.
Which is an epic, you know, starring Orlando Bloom, takes place during the Crusades and about the Siege of Jerusalem. And the theatrical cut was 2.5 hours, and while that's still pretty lengthy, there's a lot of characters that just randomly disappear for no reason. Like, it feels rushed and confused, and the director's cut is 45 minutes longer. And it really gives the story room to breathe, gives more motivations to the characters, and just makes it a better watch. I don't think the director's cut of Kingdom of Heaven is still a great movie. Something about Orlando Bloom in the lead. I can't believe him leading armies like I could Russell Crowe or someone like that. But I think that if you're going to watch that movie, the director's cut is the one to watch, and it's certainly a much better film than the theatrical cut. So I think we've talked a lot about various director's cuts on this episode of SequelCast Special. What do you think? Any closing thoughts?
I don't know. I guess like I've never really been in a position to sort of seriously think about director's cuts. I guess all I can say is the ones I like, I really, really like. And all the rest, I don't care. You know, a director that I like and respect, I want to see what kind of director's cut they would produce.
I guess that can be a final question. Aside from the Thief and the Cobbler that you were talking about, is there a film you can think of that you wish would get some kind of director's cut? Or is there some fabled director's cut you've heard about that you'd like to see?
Oh, gosh. Well, I guess, you know what I would like? A lot of these films that have multiple versions, I really wish there was at least a definitive cut. You know, whether that means putting absolutely every scrap of footage into it or just, you know, getting it close to that original vision, I wish there was a definitive cut of Legend. I wish there was a definitive cut of I guess there is a definitive cut of Blade Runner. But yeah, I want definitive cuts of movies. I want to know that a film is well and truly done when I'm watching it.
That does make it very confusing for the consumer, doesn't it? You go to a store and there's two or three different versions of a film. You don't know which one to watch, which one to get. I mean, yeah, I guess I'll say for me, one thing I'm curious about, we were talking about Star Wars earlier and how George Lucas did the special edition for the original trilogy, so to speak. I wonder if he's going to go back and do special editions and new cuts of the prequel trilogy down the line.
You know, given time, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, no, I mean, given his history of having special editions of a lot of different versions of his film, his different films that he's produced or directed, I think you're right, and I think it could be really interesting. They have had deleted scenes on DVDs, and some of those are pretty interesting for the prequel trilogy, and I wouldn't mind seeing him revisit those. There's talks of him doing that. Of him doing a director's cut of Phantom Menace when Phantom Menace was in theaters, and he was talking about scenes he wanted to incorporate that he never really did. I think as it stands now, on the latest Blu-ray release of the Phantom Menace, they, when it was in theaters and on the original video release, Yoda was a puppet that yes. Notoriously is shitty looking.
Somehow it is worse than a puppet made yeah. in the late 70s.
But in the latest release of Phantom Menace, they have it with the CG Yoda that looks better than the puppet they did for the original version of that film.
You know what I would love? If the director's yeah. cut of Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, was the original theatrical cut of Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope.
Oh, that'd be very confusing.
But I'd like it. I'd pay for that.
Yeah. Sure. And, I mean, there's so much, I think we just barely touched the surface here in this discussion of director's cuts on the sequel cast special. But I think it's, well worth it. I think it's a good discussion we've had.
It's one that we'll probably have to revisit next year.
For a sequel cast special, this is Matt.
And this is Thrasher.
Saying,
you got your director in my cut.
You got my cut in your director.
Why, these things taste great together.
Oh. I made a funny. Oh. Okay.
Was it Tim Curry as Master Splinter?
I was trying to do Master Splinter, but then I forgot what Master Splinter sounded like.
In the movies, he sounded like this. I made a funny.
Yeah, or in like the live-action movies, he was voiced by Kevin Clash. But then in the CG film, he was voiced by Mako.
Badass.
But they both sounded similar in what they were trying to do. Anyway, okay. thanks for listening to the Sequel Cast special. Check out other episodes of all the Sequel Cast shows, including Sequel Cast, Sequel Commentary, and Sequel Cast special at sequelcast.com. Good night.